Today's podcast is presented by Podgo. Podgo is the easiest way for you to monetize your podcast, providing podcasters with a flat rate for ad space so you can always know how much you get when you include an ad from Podgo. Apply today to become a member and immediately be connected with advertisers that fit your audience. That's podgo.co at podgo.co. And be sure to add our podcast in the How Did You Hear About Podgo section of the application. Welcome, I'm Lauren Lee Binstock, and you're listening to a Trauma Survivor Thrivers podcast. As you may know, I'm an advocate for psychedelics to help with treatment-resistant trauma. Recent research by MAPS, the Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Studies, has shown that psychedelics such as MDMA combined with psychotherapy has been found to be effective and well-tolerated in reducing post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD symptoms in veterans and first responders. For many veterans, psychedelics have been life-changing. My guest today is a former Army Ranger, former private military contractor, Purple Heart recipient, and veteran transition coach who founded The Combat Coach. He's also a psychedelic integrative coach for Heroic Hearts Project and a student of psychology. Similar to many veterans, Casey Pippett had suffered PTSD, that is, until his first experience with psychedelics. Casey, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Well, as a veteran, you struggled with PTSD. Can you talk a little bit about the trauma you experienced in the military and what PTSD symptoms you struggled with?
Yeah. So back in 2011, I was on my third deployment and I was wounded on a routine operation that we were conducting. And an enemy combatant had blown himself up with a grenade and had gotten me and two other guys at the same time. And all of us survived, all of us with a lot of wounds and, you know, missing pieces of our minds that are left there. But I just found myself in a high state of stress all the time, just always very hyper-vigilant, always worried, always anxious, not sleeping good, you know. But I turned to the same remedies that we were all conditioned to turn to, which was alcohol generally, and you know, reckless behavior and things like that. And you know, we think that those things are going to help us get through those waves of emotions, but they just kind of enhance them so to speak. But you know, just that the typical surface level post-traumatic stress symptoms, you know.
I know that PTSD symptoms include, you know, risky behavior, which lead to other traumatic events, traumatic experiences. How long did you live with this PTSD?
I got out in 2012. The incident happened in 2011. So from 2011 till about, I think my 2017, mm-hmm. You know, and it was more or less just kind of like, I found myself like in this proverbial maze, just trying to find a way out, you know, turning all these blind corners and finding dead ends and stuff. And then an ex-girlfriend had introduced me to psilocybin mushrooms and she, you know, swore up and down, this is going to help you and all this stuff. And I was like, you know, at that point I was really just whatever, fine. And I hadn't done them yet ever. So I did it and it just kind of, it opened all the doors that I couldn't open myself to really rationalize my experiences and rationalize my life at the time. And to really understand and encompass myself and my own reality, you know, to be able to understand how the events that I had been through had led to that moment of me being able to have these mushrooms and expand my conscious awareness of myself.
Your first experience was with psilocybin mushrooms.
Yeah.
Before then, did you seek any other modalities, any type of talk therapy or anything like that before?
Yeah, I had been seeing a therapist, or more like a guidance counselor, through the VA Vet Center, which is like the place that the veterans go that just to talk to somebody without any, you know, they're not psychologists, they're just kind of coaches, so to speak. And I really wasn't getting much out of it. And I don't want to blame him, that guy, or the organization so much as just my mind was just not able to really grasp what I needed at the time. You know, like I had an idea of what I thought I needed, and it wasn't what I, you know, was seeking. It wasn't helping me. And I found myself just going to these sessions every time and just complaining about my life and, you know, the people in it and the circumstances of myself and things like that. And I really wasn't getting any feedback or at least wasn't receptive to it. And it wasn't until being able to really get in touch with myself emotionally with mushrooms that I was able to be like, oh, okay. Like there's here, now that door's open. Now I'm receptive to this information. I'm receptive to this, you know, modality. And, but yeah, prior to that, it was just kind of like, I was just like, I need something. So I'm going to go do this. And it, you know, really wasn't resonating too well at that time, but yeah. I still see a therapist now just because I feel like, you know, why not?
Right.
And I'm much more in tune with that, whole structure of mental health development now than I was then. You know, it's definitely, it's something that I definitely, find myself more interested in as like finding, pushing, like, you know, I'm a student in psychology, so I'm pushing myself towards that realm of work for my life. So, you know, it's, for me, it's all about, it's like, I'm there with it now.
I feel like a lot of veterans do deal with severe PTSD, and sometimes talk therapy isn't as effective. Do you suggest psychedelics for veterans who are dealing with PTSD, or anyone really dealing with PTSD, just from your experience?
I do if they have exhausted all other efforts, you know, like I did. Like I exhausted medication, I exhausted talk therapy, I exhausted everything else. And I was just like, I don't know what else to do, you know? And I got to that point. And I think that is where we're the most receptive to a psychedelic experience, is when we've hit a point where we're like, I don't know what else to do. Mm-hmm. So I would recommend it to those people, but I feel like it's something that's really, you really need to understand why you're doing it in order mm-hmm. to do it. You know, like we need to, if we're using these things for mental health purposes, we really need to understand that that's what we're using it for. We're not using it just to trip out and have a good time. Like, yeah, that's right. Cool. But if you're hurting and you want to heal and you've exhausted every other point, every avenue of approach to that end goal, then I think psychedelics would definitely benefit a lot of people.
You also participated in an ayahuasca ceremony.
Yeah.
What was that experience like, and how did it compare to psilocybin?
So I had talked to a friend prior to going to my retreat who had already been to one, and he's a veteran himself, former Ranger as well. And I was like, so what do I need to expect? And he goes, don't be afraid to die. And I was like, okay.
Oh my goodness.
I knew what he meant, you know? And I was like, all right, cool. I'm good with that. Like I can do that. And, you know, that's kind of what it was, but it wasn't scary. Like it was difficult for sure. You know, like you're presented with basically a mirror of yourself and somebody guiding you through analyzing that self you see in the mirror. You're seeing yourself almost in a third person with a guide, and to be able to have the guide itself, which is the medicine, ironically, for those who've done it know, and those who don't, like everyone will tell you that a female entity kind of shows up in your visions mm-hmm. and guides you through this experience. And that is what made it for me, because I didn't really have to, I don't want to say I didn't have to figure things out for my own, but I had something to explain it to me, you know, like, this is what you've been through. This is who you are, without all of these layers, all of these labels, stigmas and opinions and pain. And, you know, just kind of, you see yourself in the bare bones. And that experience of seeing yourself that way really helps you open up to the reality that, like, I am nothing, but I'm also everything, you know? And that changes the game a lot in your everyday life, because when you are able to detach from the meaning that we give a lot of things to, you know, that our egos give to be able to justify our existence and stuff, it makes life a lot easier when you don't have to worry about those things. And, you know, especially the experiences that you've had, like the ones that are painful that you hold on to, the anger you have at people, like it really shows you that everything you think about your reality, your immediate life is in a way, all in your head. You know, it's like you are basing people, events, and things off of what people have based people, events, and things off of. You know what I mean? It's like you're really just regurgitating other people's observations about your own reality. But we all know at the same time, for that time you're doing it, and I think this is for everybody, it just doesn't sit right until you're able to come up with your own interpretation.
I interviewed someone who told me about this entity, this guide. And that's interesting that you said that, because I don't really, I, you know, I've done MDMA, I've done LSD, I have not done ayahuasca. I'm not going to lie, it scares me just a little bit. But I do think it's something that I will be open to. You know, he told me, and I thought I found this really profound, that, you know, these psychedelics, they don't heal you. They provide a roadmap to heal. They show you what you need to see in order to heal. And I think, and that's extremely important when it comes to integration. Like I feel like you can't just do these ceremonies or do these psychedelics and just say, okay, I'm done, I'm good. Right. Mm-hmm. Cause you yourself, you are a psychedelic integrative coach for right. Heroic Hearts Project. Can you tell me a little bit about the Heroic Hearts Project? And then I want to know exactly your role in integration.
All right, yeah, for sure. So Heroic Hearts Project is a 501c3 nonprofit. What we specialize in is sending veterans who are struggling with PTSD and who have, like I said, exhausted all of their efforts to psilocybin and ayahuasca retreats in South America. It's founded by a former Army Ranger like myself. This is why we're all connected. And but that's what we do, is we send people to Peru or Costa Rica or Jamaica or Colombia to participate in these retreats. We usually send about 10 to 15 people at a time, about 2 or 3 times a year. The results have been great. You know, 9 out of 10 people that go down there come back feeling rejuvenated, cleansed of, you know, like a lot of what they've dealt with. You know, all the weight that we carry is what I like to call it. And we come back real finding that weight isn't so heavy anymore, you know, and then we find that we, in a way, we're making that weight heavy on ourselves. And that's where that integration work comes in, which is, you know, I do that for them. And I also operate the Heroic Hearts Project Instagram. But what I'm finding that from guys that come back is just really like a sense of relief, you know, just like, and it's not so much that the memories don't go away, the experiences don't go away. Even the pain doesn't necessarily go away, but in the way we deal with the pain is what changes everything. You know, once you're able to understand it, you really harness the power to be able to mitigate it. And that is where the integration work comes in. I went a year ago now, and I'm still integrating from that experience, you know, and it's just constant discipline and reminders that how I would have reacted to things before is totally in my control and in my power, and how I react to them now, when I remind myself of that, changes everything. And when we create those habitual responses, we rewire our brain to not be so sensitive to these triggers that we were once very sensitive to. So it really comes, in a way, like I said earlier, it comes back to it all being in your head, you know? And I don't want to say, I don't mean that in the context of like, it's all in your head, you know, I mean, but it is, you know, we have the power to control what's in our head once we learn how to.
I don't know if you've read the book, The Body Keeps the Score.
It's a great book.
Yeah. Very amazing book. It was like eye-opening when I read it. I was like, this is what's happening with me. Yeah. I'm a sexual abuse survivor. And it took me like 20 something years to figure out like what is happening with me. I thought, okay, this happened, you know, as a child. I didn't tell anybody for over 20 years, 25 years. And it was just like, maybe there's something wrong with me mentally. I realize it was PTSD. And then, you know, I went into learning about all these psychedelics and it kind of just found me, right? I feel like I didn't know how to access this in a way that would help me mentally. Mm-hmm. You know, I as a child, I did do I did mushrooms or whatever as a child, but you know, that and that was just not a great idea, especially because I was dealing with trauma that I didn't realize I was dealing with. So I do want to talk to you about the importance of integration and why you wanted to become the psychedelic integrative coach.
Well, I didn't have an integration coach. I mean, I did through Hero Cross Project once I did ayahuasca, but prior to that, you know, I was interpreting everything on my own. And I think I did a decent job. You know, like I read books like The Body Keeps the Score. I read a lot of books about, you know, psychology and dealing with trauma and things like that. And listened to a number of Aubrey Marcus and Joe Rogan podcasts, you know. At the time I was working overseas. So I was over there like 3 months at a time at home for a month. And while I was over there, you know, I was just like, after that first mushroom trip, my mind just expanded and I was like, I need knowledge. I need information. I need to understand all this. And it was interesting because it's not something I'd ever really cared about before. Like prior to that, I didn't read books. I didn't do anything good for myself, you know? And then all of a sudden I just had this hunger to just be doing everything to fuel my mind full of information about this stuff. And doing all that on my own, I think was a stepping stone to wanting to be an integration coach, because what I've learned, especially now that I'm doing the combat coach stuff, is that it's not so much that people can't get through what they're going through, it's that they don't know how. Mm-hmm. And I remember those feelings of having that dead end and like wondering why there was no one that could give me exactly the information that I felt I needed. And I want to be that source for especially the veteran community, to be like, hey, look, I've been through this. I have felt what you're feeling. This is what worked for me. I think it'll work for you. And that importance of that integration. There's another side of it too, though, is it's like that willingness. Like we have to be willing to want help. We have to be willing to want to understand what's going on. And that comes back to like, you know, what you asked about recommending people psychedelics is you have to be willing to want to take that leap. And that's all the way down at the smallest level, just to have and talk therapy. You have to be willing to put yourself out there and be vulnerable about your situation with another person so that you can get the help that you need to get through whatever it is you're going through. And I grew up with parents who are very emotionally unavailable. They didn't, you know, I never knew how to manage my emotions. I never understood my emotions. Rather, I just blocked them out because that's what I observed them doing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the case for a lot of people in my generation. And that's another reason why it's important to learn. It's not so much, like I said, that you can't get through what you're going through, but knowing how to and having somebody tell you like, this is normal. This is okay. What you're dealing with is not crazy. This is something everyone thinks about. This is something that everyone goes through, especially in the veteran community. You know, like we all think we're alone once we're out, because it seems that way, because all your support is now gone. And you have people that don't around you that don't understand what you've been through. And you're going to them for guidance. You're going to them for help. And you're crying for help. Somebody help me. No one knows how to help you because they haven't been through what you've been through. And, you know, I just want to be that person that's like, I can help you because I have been through this. You know, I have gone through these motions. I've been wounded. I've been to combat. I've done these things. So, you know,
when veterans come to Heroic Hearts Project, do you ever turn anyone away? Is there, or do you accept these people? I know that you try to figure out if they need this, but I can assume that if they're coming to you and they're veterans who've gone through all of this, that they probably do need it. How is the vetting process? How does that work?
So we actually have do a pretty good vetting process, and we make sure that, you know, we try and express to these applicants that like, it's very important that you follow this diet. It's very important that you have an intention set of why you want to do this, things like that. We try to get them to understand that this is a very powerful experience and that it needs to be taken seriously. And sometimes that's not the case. Like it's very rare, but once in a while, there'll be somebody who doesn't want to do the diet, who still drinks all the way up to the day of the retreat and things like that. And then they end up not having a good time. And, you know, it's like, we can't make them do these things. We can only trust that they're going to. So I haven't been around long enough to see anybody denied. I'm sure it has happened because they couldn't get off their medication or for some other complication, you know, things like that. Because a lot of these guys are on are dependent on the medication that the VA gives them to get through each day. And, you know, it's coming off of that even for a couple of weeks prior to retreat can be very difficult, you know, and some of them can't do it. So I think, like I said, I haven't seen anybody denied. I haven't denied anybody, but I think it has happened, but it's very, very rare because we want them to heal. You know, we want them to have this experience. We want them to be able to come back and tell other people about this experience that are also struggling. So we try and exhaust all efforts that we can to get them through the program. But if it comes down to it, like, it's just not a good fit, it's not a good fit.
That makes a lot of sense to me. I was on Zoloft before, actually, no, it was Prestige. It was an antidepressant before my MDMA session. And I remember being told I had to wean off of it. And it was actually really, really hard to wean off because I was getting withdrawal symptoms. Even though I was titrating down, it was like subtract like five milligrams each week or every other week or so. And it was still really, really difficult. So I can see, and I wasn't even on that for that long. For 10 years, they actually thought I was bipolar. Yeah. So I was on bipolar medication for 10 years. And then when I was like, there's a such thing as, you know, PTSD for sexual abuse survivors. It took me a really long time to figure that out.
Right.
And then I had to go into treatment. I was extremely suicidal at one point in my life, not too long ago, actually just last year. And then I went into residential treatment for a month. And I was literally willing to do everything. And I feel like the psychedelics, actually the MDMA actually got me off of the Zoloft and the Prestige. I'm not on any medication because of it. It was extremely helpful, and life-changing. When people do come to you and you do, how long is the integration after these ceremonies?
For a couple months, we have group calls, like once a month for, I think 2 to 3 months. And, but we have weekly calls with our clients, to stay up on top of them prior to and after going to a retreat. We keep that door open even after like the time that we say, like, we're going to be here for you has come to an end. Like, that door's open. We're always like, hey, even after this last session, if you need anything, just let us know. You know, like, this is very powerful stuff, and can be very confusing, you know, when you need help interpreting what you've been through. Like, when I went through my retreat, I also found out that I was molested when I was 15 by a family friend. I was drugged and molested on a family trip to Mexico. And I never knew about it. You know, but once I found out about it, it had made sense. Like, I had been struggling with PTSD since I was a teenager and didn't even know it, you know, like you'd mentioned, and couldn't remember it. And then during my first night of the retreat, ayahuasca was like, yeah, this happened to you. You don't remember it, but this did happen to you. And it blew me away. It screwed me up, you know, for a little bit. Cause it was just like, man, I can't believe, you know, you go through the motions of, I can't believe, I'm sure, you know, like, that I get that I let that happen to me, you know, or there was, you know, why didn't anyone protect me and save me and things like that. And, you know, you got to go through all those to grow through all those, you know? And, so I get it when it comes down to integrating this experience. It's just like having to face that reality and understand that the last, however many years of your life have been a certain way because of one experience that you don't remember, can be traumatizing in its own way to a degree. But, you know, I think as long as you have somebody to help you understand that what happened to you is not your fault, and it is unfortunately a circumstance that has helped you come to this point to healing yourself and opening your mind, your conscious awareness of yourself and your life, and, you know, moving on from it.
You know, you're not the first person who has told me that after doing ayahuasca, they realized that they were abused or molested because they blocked that out.
Yeah, it was in that book too. That one Air Force guy he was talking about saw a newspaper that his priest when he was a kid had been arrested, and all of a sudden this memory comes back.
Yeah. It's crazy what the mind can do to try to forget it, but then I guess, you know, your body remembers and you get those triggers, those reactions to it. Which can be traumatizing. And I think that's what a lot of people also need to understand, is that things will come up.
Right.
You won't even realize happened to you.
Right. But it's not just a trip, you know, like,
right.
This is the way the shamans described it to me, is just like, your first night's going to be like installing a virus scanning software into your mind to find out where the pain lies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly how it was. Like, I even remember hearing Mother Ayahuasca be like, I'm looking for some stuff. Hang on. You know,
really?
Like, yeah, it was a trip. And knowing that though, before going in, I was like, oh, all right, cool. You know, like the first night was great, because I was just like in this nebula and soaring through space while she was doing her digging. And then the end of it came down to like, this is the information that I found. And then I was left to sit with that for a whole 24 hours until the next night.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, so what are these ceremonies like? Is it, it's multiple days, right?
Yeah. The one I went to was 3 days, but we typically, the organization usually uses 5 to 7 day retreats. But for the 3 days, like the ceremonies are very ritualistic. It's very professional. It's very ancient. And it's really cool. There's like a big temple. It's called the Maloka, and it's a big temple. Mine was filled with like golf course sand, and it was very comfy. And we all had like a little spot around the octagon, is what it kind of looked like. And we all had our individual places, and you know, the shamans like did their ceremony, and then they played this music during the trip called the Ikaros. And the music is designed to open up different parts of the experience. Like whenever a style of music changes, it either gets more intense or more easy. You know, like you'll hear when the music shifts to something a little more dramatic sounding, people will start throwing up and things like that. Like it's really interesting how the music kind of dictates what's going on around you. And you know, like for me, the second night was extremely difficult. Like I felt like I was physically fighting myself for 6 hours, and I was sweating, mm-hmm. and just, it was rough, but you know, it was necessary. You know, that's just part of the process, but it didn't like scar me or make me not want to do it again. You know, actually I came back the third night, like, I feel like I had something to do with how hard that was, and I'm not going to do that again tonight, you know? So, you know, and I ended up that third night, I ended up drinking like 7 to 10 cups and just going super deep, but it was great. Like it wasn't super difficult. It was very eye-opening. And like, I remember at one point in the third night, I was kind of the Tibetan singing bowls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They were playing those, and it was just those, and I was just closed my eyes, and I felt like I was just floating in space, just like this empty void, but it wasn't scary. And then I kept seeing like Buddhas along with the bowls, and they were like rearranging like a kaleidoscope type deal. And then I just feel this like hand reach out and touch right here. And I just felt like, you know, just like, oh, wow. And I felt like healed, so to speak. You know, like that was on the last night, so it was like, I think like a some closure to the whole thing, you know, just like, here you go, you're set for a while now, you know.
Wow.
I'm feeling the calling to go back now again, because integration is getting more difficult than it was. Mm-hmm. You know, so, but my integration coach has told me, he's like, yeah, well, now that means that the medicines wore off, and now it's all your responsibility. So
how many sessions do you guys suggest?
I think, what do we, 4 or 5,
mm-hmm.
over a week is typically what the retreats do. Like, mm-hmm. the one I went to was real short because it was stateside, because so, it was during COVID and we couldn't go to South America at the time. So
so after you've done your session, when are you able to do it again, or is this like a one-time thing, or is it like you were saying, you feel this calling
yeah
to do it?
So we were actually just talking about that in a meeting the other day. Like, what do we tell guys who have done it recently? And we try to keep them in out of a 6-month window, you know, cause we want them to have time to work on what they experienced in the last retreat. You know, we want them to integrate a little bit before they go again.
That makes sense.
Obviously it's levels of trauma dependent, but like when I went, there was a guy that came with us that was like, oh yeah, I just did it last week. And he was already back again. He's done it like 20 times that year. And I was like, how do you do this that often? Like,
oh my goodness. Yeah. You were saying it's rough, right? You're talking about people throwing up and vomiting. Yeah. Like you have to really get extremely vulnerable. It's like you're naked in front of all these people, right?
Pretty much. But yeah. No one's paying attention to you. You know, like you hear it, you know, no one cares. They're all in they're in their own world, you know, and you find that out real quickly. You're like, man, what if I start throwing up? I'm nervous, you know, and then it's like, no one cares. No one's even looking at me. Like, you know, everyone's having their own, dealing with their own suffering. So, you know, but that is like a lot of people are like, I don't want to throw up in front of other people. And it's like, it's like anything else you've never done. It's never what you think, you know?
How do you feel the next day? Is it like hangover? Is it like,
oh no hangover. Depending on what your experience was like the night before, I mean, you can feel really tired. You can feel really lethargic, just depending on what's on your mind really. But as far as like the physical effects, there's not really any. I think if anything, you probably feel a little lighter because you've been, you know, getting a lot of stuff out of your gut. And, I remember feeling just like kind of like weightless in a way, in that sense, like my body was clean, you know. But
you talked about diet. There's a suggested diet, and I'm assuming it's to eat clean,
right?
And honestly, that's what I was told before I was to doing the MDMA. It was suggested that I ate well. I didn't drink or do anything like that. Do you guys have a specific reason for it?
Yeah. So it's actually been it's like a shaman recommended thing. Like it's something that they've, even the shamans have to do a very strict, very bare bones vegan diet for a long time before they can become shamans. And, but that's what we recommend. A vegan diet, a month to 2 weeks prior is what's recommended, but you can get away with like chicken and fish, but no pork, no red meat, no alcohol, no tobacco, no weed, you know, nothing else. And just rice and veggies and a white meat. And you can't even have, you don't want a lot of salt. You don't want a lot of seasonings, just bare bones stuff, because you don't want anything to inhibit the medicine to do its thing, you know?
Right.
And if any of those things that you shouldn't have prior, you're not going to get what you went there for. Mm. You're actually probably going to have a bad time.
So do it. So do the clean diet.
Do the diet. It sucks, but it's worth it.
We were talking earlier about you creating this. You're the founder of the Combat Coach.
Yeah.
What made you want to create this organization?
Just like I said earlier, it's like wanting to be that. I noticed that there wasn't anyone in between us in the transition process. You know, like there's therapists and things like that, but you being a veteran and being somebody who becomes so conditioned with small groups of people that you can trust without blinking an eye, it's really hard to open up to people that haven't experienced what you have. But opening up to people who have experienced what you have is much easier, because you understand that there's like a common bond there. There's an unwritten, you know, law there that says like, I understand this. And there's no guide for that transition process. There's no guide for helping the veteran be a civilian. And I was like, well, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to fill that gap and do the best I can to mitigate some of the challenges of the transition process. Like, I'm not going to be able to stop, make it easier. I'm not going to be able to stop the challenges from coming, but I can help those at least know that what they're going through is not, they're not alone. You know, they're not crazy and it's completely normal.
What do you say to people who are skeptics of psychedelics? as a means for healing.
Oh, I don't even argue with them. I'm just like, all right. I'm like, I've done them and I know what I got out of it. And I know other people who can say the same thing. So it's like, you know, a lot of people, like, they go, oh, I did mushrooms once and had a bad time. You know, it's like, well, when and where were you and who were you with? Oh, I was at a party with some friends. You know, like, yeah, of course you're going to have a bad time. It's not what they're for. You know, but I have friends who are like, well, what's it like? You know, they're not necessarily open to it, but they're curious without judgment. Like, what's it like? What is this? Does it really help? You know, like things like that. I'm like, yeah, it does. And I explain it to the best of my ability, but it's like, I tell them at the end of the day, man, it's like, you're going to have to experience it for yourself to understand what, because it does different things for every person. Mm-hmm. You know, it serves a different purpose for each person. You know, like, it's not just a, I think a lot of people are starting, because psychedelics are becoming more prevalent, they have an idea that it's like a drug, like a prescribed drug that you're going to take and all your problems go away, or at least numbs them. And that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I tell them, like, it's going to open doors to more problems, but it's going to open doors to new methods of dealing with those problems that you didn't have before.
Right.
And you find yourself feeling more confident in yourself and dealing with these problems and resilient, and realizing that much of the things you think are problems aren't problems at all. You know, and that's what you mostly are going to get out of it, is just an awareness of what it matters and what doesn't.
Yeah. You know?
Because we suffer a lot from what we think matters more than that things that don't, you know.
100%. I couldn't agree with that more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone actually told me that the military community kind of looks at ayahuasca to be more in line with, I guess, the military mindset rather than like psilocybin or anything else. Is that true? Is there like a more of a camaraderie with ayahuasca?
Yeah, because especially going with a group of veterans, like, you're there with your people, and there's like a something that there's like a another bond that gets built between you, because you've all been suffering and you're all there to heal your suffering, and you all know that. Not only that, but to be there with people who have been to combat and experienced war and combat trauma, are, you know, there's just some magic that happens there, and it kind of reestablishes a sense of community. You know, like, prior to that, there's a brotherhood, but you're dealing with a lot of guys who seek brotherhood on one hand, but are completely lost on the other. So they're always, especially, it's happened to me. I've done it. I've been a bad friend, and I've had bad friends from the military who just, like, for some reason, when we get out, we're just like chickens with our heads cut off. We don't know what to do. We don't know how to be human. We're reckless abandons, and we're going to treat each other that way until, you know, you find something like this where you really get to narrow down, like, what do you want in a friend? What do you want in a brother? What do you want in a community? And once you establish that, then your network becomes a little more solidified. Prior to that, it's just built on the mutual experience of going to combat together, which is great. You know, it serves its purpose, but it's the curtains close at some point, and you got to learn how to deal with that. And a lot of us don't, you know, until we find something like ayahuasca to really remember how to be a human being again.
Have you done other psychedelics, or has it just been the psilocybin and the ayahuasca?
Yeah, I've done MDMA. I actually did that before doing mushrooms, and that was crazy because that's when the whole molesting thing, like, first came to my mind. I was like, you know, I remember going to Mexico and something just not being right. And I found out later that family friend was weird like that. But it's like, no, not me. It wouldn't happen to me. But it was like, it's this underlying thought in my mind that I had been through something like that. I was like, nah. But I remember I took a lot, probably too much. But I just gabbed for like 12 hours. You know, I was awake for 12. That's how much I took. It was not good. But I just like talked about things that I never even knew I had to talk about for hours. And I just remember feeling so like, where did all that come from? All these things I've been bothered by just came out. Like, I've been completely suppressing them and expressing them through you know, action, like reckless activity and things like that. And I realized, I was like, I'm a really angry dude for a lot of reasons. And I didn't even know it, you know? And then once I did mushrooms, it kind of, that like helped me rationalize all that anger,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
But I've also done acid one time and I did not enjoy that. And I will not do that again. But yeah, it was a bad sentence setting too. So, but still, like, it was just really weird and I didn't enjoy what acid does. So I was like, I'm more of a, you know, outside of MDMA, I like the natural stuff.
Yeah. Wow. Well, is there anything that you would like to add?
For anyone that's, I guess, struggling, like what you're struggling is not anything that anyone hasn't struggled before. And while it may seem like you're alone, it's probably more often than not you thinking you're alone or your immediate circle doesn't understand you. And then you just, in that case, just find people that have gone through what you've gone through and are experiencing what you're experiencing. But that's going to require you to be vulnerable. It's going to require you to put yourself out there. And we have to understand that if we want to heal, we have to be uncomfortable. We have to put ourselves in uncomfortable situations. We can't just sit back and go, I wish things were this way. Well, things aren't going to be the way you wish or want them to be until you make them that way. You know, we're the creators of our own little universe, and that's just that's all there is to it. You know, I mean, it seems more complicated. It feels more complicated than it actually is. And it's really not complicated at all. It just takes good decision-making.
Yeah. I think sometimes it feels complicated because they're authority figures that tell you what's right and what's wrong when they don't even know. Right. And so those are the stories we kind of tell ourselves.
Yeah. And the complicated part of it is the conditioning. It's just thinking the what if of what whoever or what is going to think of what you're doing. Exactly. And if you can get past that, if you can get past the fear of what other people are going to think about what you doing, what's best for you, then you're gold. That's all you got to do.
Yeah. That's something I'm still working on.
Oh yeah. Me too. All the time. You know, it's not, I don't think it's like there's another side of this fence, you know, but I think we walk on this fence and sometimes we fall one side to the other, depending. But I think the more often we experience having to make good decisions for ourselves without worrying about what other people think, it becomes more habitual. And then eventually you're on this path where you're just doing everything that you know you need to be doing. And the repercussions will show you that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Thank you so much, Casey. I really appreciate you coming on.
Oh, no problem. Thanks again for having me. This is awesome.
Absolutely. That was Casey Pibbitt, former Army Ranger, founder of the Combat Coach and psychedelic integrative coach for Heroic Hearts Project. For more on Casey, visit my website at atstpodcast.com. That's the letter atstpodcast.com. You can also find my social media platforms at the top of my homepage. Casey has also contributed to November's issue of Authentic Insider, which you can find at my website. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to my email list to get Authentic Insider magazine in your inbox monthly. You've been listening to a Trauma Survivor Thrivers podcast. I'm Lori Lee Binstock. Thank you so much for being a part of the conversation. Take care. We'll